Thanks for coming back to another episode of Pitch It, a fintech conversation amongst founders, investors, and friends. I'm your host, Todd Anderson, Chief Content Officer at Fintech Nexus. And what we do is we take a peek behind the curtain. What motivates someone to start a company? How do investors make the right bet? What do accelerators do during and help enabling the process of growing your company? How do banks think of founders? Not to mention, we try to have some fun, and what you'll see is we'll also do some special episodes. We have some new features coming, so stick with us, and you'll get all you'll need to know about the fintech startup landscape. Pitch It is really a part of a larger podcast network here at Fintech Nexus. You can go to my colleague Peter, our co-founder and chairman, for Fintech One-on-One. You can subscribe to his feed, or we have our newest podcast by one of our writers, Isabel Castro, the Fintech Coffee Break. For everything produced by Fintech Nexus, you can check out Fintech Nexus Podcast, which is really our content fire hose. All shows, webinar replays, even in-person event content, not to mention our weekly news show. As always, we hope that you rate the show and write a review. I try to really take listener feedback seriously, and as it helps make the show better. You can also follow the podcast and all of our podcasts on the feed of your choice, whether it be Apple, Spotify, wherever you like to listen, or come directly to news.fintechnexus.com. Now, let's get on with the show. On today's episode, I talk with Jose Carlos, co-founder and co-CEO of Palinka. Jose and I talk, what are some of the core differences between the U.S. market and the Latin American market when it comes to fintech? The impact open banking's had on, say, a market like Mexico versus a market like Brazil. Where fintech sits today in Mexico. There was this great boom in 2018. How big of an impact did that really have on the everyday Mexican user of fintech products? What Palinka is looking to do, their journey, which is from originally lending now to a data and technology provider, investment capital, taekwondo, and much, much more. Before I get into the episode with Jose, just a couple of short PSAs. We have our annual Fintech Nexus USA, May 10th and 11th, New York City. Last time to get tickets is April 21st, so don't miss out. You'll get discounted tickets for the last time. Also, Pitch It. The semifinals will be April 26th and 27th. The finals, May 11th. So make sure you check those out. Semifinals are virtual. The finals will be in person at Fintech Nexus USA. And finally, if you want to sponsor an episode, sponsor a digital offering that we have, there's many, many digital offerings, or even sneak in a sponsorship for Fintech Nexus USA, just go ahead and reach out anytime, todd@fintechnexus.com. Now, without further ado, I present Jose Carlos, co-founder and co-CEO Palinka. Hey, Jose, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, I like to kick off the episodes. If you can just tell the audience a little bit about yourself and kind of what's been your journey in fintech to now and kind of what brought you to starting the current venture that you're with.
Of course. My name is Jose Carlos, but my friends call me Pepe. I grew up in Mexico City, but almost my entire family has roots in a small town in Colima. I studied economics with a minor in finance, and that's where I discovered my passion for startups and hackathons. One day thanks to one of these hackathons, I had the incredible opportunity to become the first intern at Uber for Latin America, which but that time was a big deal since Uber was only hiring experienced people with MBAs and backgrounds at firms like McKinsey. So I was thrilled to be working with such talented individuals. And you know, like, well, what I learned is more about the culture of execution, right? So during my time at Uber, I had a chance to work closely with the couriers in Mexico. And I was shocked to learn that many of them were renting their motorcycles for $600 per month. And when they could own their own motorcycle for half the price, right? So that's when I learned that most of Mexicans lack access to credit and struggle to prove income, right? So I met my co-founder Pierre, and which was working with Reverse Data. And we decided to quit over and create our own financial product for independent workers. So that's the story. Like, I do not have a lot of like experience in the market. Like, the most experience I have is like around startups and like founding two companies.
What gave you that that passion to start a company yourself? I mean, you mentioned you're an intern at Uber. You know, many people I talk to on the show, they work in, you know, either banking or some career for 10 or 15 years. And then they're like, all right, let me start a company, or I've seen this problem over, you know, X amount of years. I'm going to try to solve it myself. But you clearly took that leap a bit earlier. Kind of, where does that come from? Is, you know, part of your family? Are they entrepreneurs? Kind of, where does that passion come from?
Oh, actually, the opposite. So first, I truly love the problem. So I witnessed firsthand the problem of financial inclusion with my family in Colima. Mm-hmm. Most of them, you know, like, recurred to predatory loans. So this is why I started this lending business. And on the other hand, I love data, right? So it's, okay, so how can I solve this problem using data, right? And when I saw this part in Uber, I decided to, as you mentioned, take the leap.
So tell us a little bit more about the company. I believe it's pronounced Palenca.
Palenca.
And yeah. So A, what does that mean, the word? And where did you come up with the idea for the name? And then tell us, obviously, a bit more about what you guys do exactly.
Of course. So Palenca or Palanca means ladder in Spanish. So we're a tool that empower businesses and financial institutions to leverage data and to make better decisions. Additionally, we own the .com, and of course it's better for, you know, like SEO.
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, the funny thing is, it's amazing how many founders I talk to that the company name comes from an easy website. Exactly. Because otherwise, you know, you can come up with this big fancy name for a company, and A, the domain is not going to be there, or the domain or the name is just too hard to remember for everyday people. So the easier it is to put in a website, usually that's kind of where founders go. It's kind of funny how it works out like that.
So in the US, almost everything is connected in some way. And it's easy to obtain information about consumers. Like, for example, the credit score system is widely used to determine financial credibility with a hit rate of 90%. And on the other hand, you know, like 7% of adults have at least, you know, like one like credit product. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you look in Latin America, the picture is quite different. For instance, in Mexico, less than 30% of individuals have a credit score. And you like the average credit score is 500, which is considered like from regular to bad. And the reasons for that is that there's no infrastructure for lending here, right? Which means that few financial companies are the ones that provide financial products. And the ones that really take that risk of, you know, lending a person with almost no information, they charge exorbitant interest rates. Yeah. I've seen products that charge users up to 400%. You know, you can, unfortunately, if a user misses a payment, they can end up defaulting and harming the credit score. Because I mean, like if you miss one payment and then you have 400% of interest and all rate, so the loan becomes like very hard to pay.
Yep.
And the thing here is that we started as a lending business and we face this problem, right? When we try to underwrite credit for gig economy workers, we try to use various tools. First, the credit scores, but you know, like not a lot of people are there. Second thing is that we try to use open banking, but open banking does not work in Mexico, right? Because people do not trust to connect their bank accounts first. And the second, there's not a lot of information. We're a cash-based economy, right? So what we're doing is that we were using screenshots from the app. It's like, okay, so send me the screenshot of your app. And then we manually were looking at their metrics and then making decisions with that, right?
Wow. So that's a lot of work. This,
yeah, not very scalable. The thing is that we brought in another co-founder, Antoine, who developed an integration with Uber and other gig apps, you know, using reverse engineering and user consent. And basically he had a competitive advantage in the independent sector while providing loans, right? But you know, like scaling a lending business in Latin America is incredibly challenging. Mm-hmm. So we needed that, right? Distribution. We have to solve fraud and collections. But what we did have is it was great technology to underwrite, right? So this technology that we developed was Palenka, but we didn't know at that time, right? We just like built these connections. So that's how we started, right? So at the end, we pivoted. And right now, what we do is that we connect everyone into the financial system, right? And then we provide visibility to financial institutions through two products. The first one is an income verification API, where Palenka makes it easy for consumers to share employment data. The second one is that we are automating collections from a borrower's paycheck. So the first thing is that now you have information about the consumer. And the second thing is that we reduce the default rate drastically, right? So if companies were charging 400%, even if now they can charge 40%, it's a 10x difference.
Yeah. So tell us, a little bit about, the technology itself. If someone has five different jobs, or they have, four different, they're an Uber driver, they work other part-time jobs. A, does it matter if they have multiple inputs in terms of their job, or does what Palenka provide give a whole picture of, hey, this is who my income, and this is kind of the money, coming in. How does it handle that? And ultimately, how much are banks willing to then lend, or other lenders willing to lend to these types of customers now with this data? I mean, have you seen it jump 20%, 30%? Like what does it mean for financial inclusion now that they can plug into a tool like Palenka?
Sure. Well, so we have an API where the user interacts, and basically they can connect their income sources, right? If it's a formal worker and Uber worker, if they sell stuff via Clip, they can connect their accounts. We aggregate those type of data, and we provide it in a standardized way to financial institutions, right? So that's how it works. Regarding how financial institutions are using us, is that we are able, like they're able to provide 50% more loans using our technology, right? Because
wow, that's a big number.
Exactly, because currently in Mexico, 90% of financial institution uses Buró de Crédito or Círculo de Crédito, which are credit scores, and basically they don't have information, right? But whenever you can, for a person that does not have a credit score, now they can basically provided with their ability to pay.
Do you think something like this tool that you guys have built will help potentially change or adjust what a credit score might be? Because, you know, with this, so with so much more information, someone who maybe was thought of as a credit score of 400, 500, but in reality, their credit score is probably higher if the lender knew of all of these inputs with a tool like Blinka.
Yeah, of course. The thing here is, like, compare, you know, like to the U.S., you know, in the U.S., I'm pretty sure they use income as a variable to underwrite credit. Mm-hmm. The thing here in Mexico is that they need to start using it, right? It's like how much this person is earning.
Yeah.
It's not that it's like alternative data, like contacts and, you know, data from the phone, but absolutely.
So, you know, there's been stepping back a little bit, you know, the last few years, there's been a lot of change happening across Latin America and specifically in Mexico related to the fintech law, and a lot of other innovation happening in the fintech market. As someone who's in the fintech market, kind of what do you see as still some of the main problems that exist for everyday Mexicans today, and how much has fintech helped the population so far, in, you know, kind of in your mind as someone who's kind of living it every day?
Yeah, so there was a boom in 2018 about, you know, like providing a bank account to adults. There were a lot of companies in that time, Albo, raising a lot of money. But the thing is here that, like, 4 years later, the bank account penetration only grew 2%, right? And the thing here is that, like, neobanks are providing with, you know, like, debit cards to the same population that already have debit cards. So I think that the major problem here is how are you targeting new customers to basically make a difference in, you know, providing a new bank account, which is, you know, like the entrance to the financial system, and then build products on top of that, you know, like product, which is a debit.
You mentioned earlier, you mentioned open banking. While it, you know, it's not the same open banking in Mexico as you might see in Brazil, but did the concept of open banking help with what you're building, in the sense that companies and lenders and banks started to understand maybe APIs better and plug and play technology better? Did that kind of help lay maybe a foundation that you guys then came in after the fact and said, you know, open banking doesn't seem to be working great here, but this is a tool that can work great?
Yeah, so the part of the open banking that we basically adopt is a part of collaboration and partnership, right? So let me give you an example. For example, in the US, you have companies like Argyle or Pingwheel that they obtain, you know, like the user's consent to access data by scraping or doing reverse engineering. However, this approach has a lot of problems. Like, the conversion rate is very low, around 24%, and there are, you know, like, legal issues. Right. So on the other hand, in the US, you have this big incumbent in the industry that is Equifax, right? They have the Work Number, which partners with payroll systems to buy data and provide revenue share for it. Right. Yeah. So let's say Polenka, like, is like the prodigious offspring of the Work Number and Argyle, right? So we, at the end, like, the inspiration that we had from open banking in Brazil is that, okay, so we have to partner with payroll systems to basically build a new type of infrastructure.
So when doing research for you know, this episode, I see that you guys are in multiple countries. You know, how different is what you're, or how different does the product need to be? Maybe it doesn't. You know, for Mexico or Colombia or any other markets that you might be looking into, is each country, do you look at it as, all right, this is a new problem that we're trying to solve. We're bringing our technology, but let's adjust it for the market. Kind of how do you approach going into some of those new markets from where you started?
Yeah, so our main focus are countries like Mexico and Brazil, which are pretty much opposite in terms of financial inclusion. Brazil has done an excellent job in this area with 85% of its population having access to financial products. And the Central Bank has implemented effective regulations for open banking, right? Where, you know, like the banks open up, you know, like the information, right? However, the information about workers' ability to pay is still necessary. So Brazil has the world's biggest economy after the US. And there are also other type of workers like peyotes and autonomous workers that basically are like 28 million people. So basically that's the need of the information about the consumers. On the other hand, in 2021 alone, the delinquency rate in Brazil increased to 17.4%, right? So I think I read this article from you guys from FinTech Nexus. So that's the opportunity right there, right?
So, you know, as you've gone through from where you started to where you are now, you've been in programs like Y Combinator, I saw. You also won our pitch competition at our Latin American event back in December. What do programs like this do, especially for early founders who are still kind of figuring their way through the product, meeting other co-founders? You know, how do programs like this help founders like yourself, especially ones that maybe haven't been around either fintech or financial services for 20 years? How do these programs help as you're trying to build and scale your company?
For Y Combinator is especially useful for Latin American companies because local funds, they're not that big. And, you know, due diligence can take up to 6 months, right? And we didn't have 6 months as a startup, right? So for especially these programs help you to raise money very quickly, to access new type of investors. And it's a signaling for them, right? They don't have to basically do a hard due diligence for pre-seed seed companies because YC already did it for them.
So, you know, you've been a founder now for a few years. I think I saw that you guys started either in late 20 or 21. So it's been a few years now. You know, what's one of the biggest lessons that you've learned either about yourself or about the company in the last few years as you've kind of started to grow and scale out what your vision is?
So be a lot resilient. So I like this phrase that if you truly love the problem, you're going to solve it. So at the end, we started as a lending company. Now we are an API, but we're solving the same problem, but from a different angle.
What about a regret? I mean, do you regret maybe staying a lending company for too long? Or did you need to get to a certain point that you figured, all right, this is the time to pivot? Like, what is, you know, how did that process work? And do you regret anything along the way?
No, no regrets. I think, you know, like one of the superpowers of Palenque founders is that we move super fast. And I really enjoy the journey. And the other thing is that we're just getting started again and again.
Tell us a little bit more about those that are around you. How big is the team today? Is everyone located in Mexico? Kind of tell us a little bit more about those around you and you know, helping you build what you guys are looking to build.
We're 26. Like 90% of the company is based in Mexico City. The rest is based in Sao Paulo. Okay. I would say 70% of the company are mostly engineers that help build, maintain the integrations. Yeah, we have a builder team of partnerships, you know, looking to partner with payroll systems to create direct integrations.
In terms of you know, raising capital, you referenced the Y Combinator piece. You know, how did investors you know, look at the problem that you were looking to solve? And what about the where you started to where you are today in terms of talking with investors? You were a lending company, now you're, you know, kind of a technology data providing company. You know, how did they view that switch? And tell us a little bit more about, you know, the investors that you've worked with and those that you talk to.
Yeah, so regarding fundraising, you really have to explain the main difference between the US and Latin America. This, what Link is doing in LATAM is a binary change of, first, you don't have information at all, and now you have information, right? So it's like a bigger market. And then you have to find someone that truly believes in your mission. So I've been very lucky to partner with three investors, I would say. First one is 500 Startups. Gilgamesh, the second is Gilgamesh Ventures, and the third one is Foundation. Those are like my top investors right now.
Yeah, we know Miguel at Gilgamesh very well. We're very friendly with him, and when it comes to an investor, I don't think you can have someone as good as Miguel with his connections, with his knowledge, and just overall his, you know, how his outlook is on fintech. He's just phenomenal.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I'm curious about the one interesting thing with the investor question. Obviously, what is the percentage of investors that you're talking to that are LATAM based versus US based?
I would say right now at this stage, 100% are investors in the US, right?
Interesting.
They're not locals. Yeah.
And I guess with that, how much is there, or how interesting are those conversations, given that are these investors super sophisticated about the LATAM markets, or some new entrants into the markets? I'm curious kind of that, of the investors in the US that are investing into LATAM, kind of where do they sit, and you know, what are the types of you know, companies that and interests that they have in the region?
Yeah, so one of our most recent investors is Foundation Capital, and they have experience in Latin America. And the second thing is that they're really sophisticated in the payroll space. They have other investments like Highline, right? So basically, they basically also automate collections directly from the paychecks.
Yeah.
So basically, they like it, they love it, and like they're trying to look to another company that is solving kind of the same problem, but in other regions, right?
So we have, you know, just a few minutes left. I like to end a little bit lighter and with some fun questions. Do you have a favorite book, or what was the last book that you read?
Yeah, so the Cold Start Problem from Andrew Chen. I've read it, I think, 3-4 times, because they have, you know, like actionable things that you can do within your company, especially when, for example, Palenka is facing a cold start problem while building coverage, right, around partnerships. So, okay, so we want to partner with every payroll system, but until we partner with every payroll system, were very useful to companies, right? If we cover with partnerships 1 million workers, I'm not interested like to a bank, right? So this book helped us a lot on how to scale and how to like create new integrations and strategy around the product roadmap.
What is what's your favorite thing to do to keep your mind fresh and not burn yourself out? Because a lot of founders try to work too hard. They don't sleep. They're always thinking about the problems, but they need to stay fresh. So what are some things that you do to ensure that when you come into work with your team, that you're fresh and that you're focused?
I love martial arts. I practice Taekwondo. I've been practicing it for almost 20 years, and it helped, for discipline, for meditation, and that's what I do. On the other hand, I try to go on vacation at least 3 times per year, disconnect, not bringing my laptop, anything. So
I'm going to assume, since you're in Mexico, that your favorite sport is soccer. That might be a bad assumption, but is your favorite sport soccer, or do you have, what is your favorite sport? And, what are some of the teams that you root for?
I like soccer. Yeah. But, I prefer Taekwondo and martial arts. It's not fun to watch them in the Olympics. But I like it, like practicing and what it means. It has like a higher end of discipline and mentality.
Well, I'm sure there's probably a lot of lessons that you can take from martial arts that you can bring to business, especially on the discipline side.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite vacation spot?
Yeah, I would say it's Uvita in Costa Rica. It's like no one's there, missing like food, beaches, and yeah.
And then last question, what inspires you? What's your biggest inspiration?
That's a great question. So it's really make a difference in the world. So, again, I'm sorry, I always go back to my family, but sometimes we will live kind of like a bubble. And whenever you go out and you see a lot of challenges, especially in emerging economies with poverty, access to basic services, I think, by doing this and by being a founder, I can make a small change in my country.
Well, Jose, you Pepe. Said you like to be called Pepe. I appreciate the time, and I appreciate you you spending some time with us here. If someone wanted to reach out to you, or they wanted to reach out to Palenka, how would they do that? How can they get in touch with you?
I don't think if I say my email, I will receive 30 emails. So I would say jose@palenka.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn with Jose Carlos Aguilar. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much again for your time. I wish you and the team continued success, and we'll hopefully get you back sometime in the future.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you.